invited to participate in a learning experience as you join us right here on Talk Radio. You'll meet new and interesting people. You'll hear fresh and stimulating ideas. You'll be a part of what Talk Radio is all about. Talk Radio is...
Ray Dream.
Palm Springs, California, the Lucky Strike program starring Jack Benny with Mary Livingston, Phil Harris, Rochester, Dennis Day, the Sportsman Quartet, and yours truly, Don Wilson.
And good morning, everyone. That's the way it sounded in all those great years of broadcasting on radio and, of course, then later on television. The great Jack Benny program, the most popular comedy program either on radio or television. With us tonight, George Balzer, writer for Jack Benny for 25 years, and with us also Larry and John Gassman of SpurdVac. And if you don't know what SpurdVac is, that's the Society to Preserve and Encourage Radio Drama, Variety, and Comedy. Gentlemen, glad to have you with us. George?
It's a pleasure to be here.
And John and Larry?
Glad to be here. Nice to be listening live rather than on tape for a change.
Oh, really?
I still got to sleep sometime.
I see. For those who don't know about the Gassmans, if you listen to National Public Radio, for the last two Rose Parades from Pasadena, they have done the... And that's a unique thing in itself, because both these gentlemen are blind. They're identical twins, and they have been reporting the Rose Parade. I don't know how you do it, and I guess you'll tell us a little bit later on.
Sure, sure, be glad to.
And George Balzer, you know, I've been an admirer of the work that you've done for so long, and we're going to have fun tonight, I hope.
I think we will. Maybe uncover a few mysteries.
One of the mysteries, of course, that I want to get into a little bit later on is what made the Jack Benny Show, other than Jack Benny, so funny? It was a combination, I guess, of many, many things.
Well, yes, it was a combination first place, we had a star who knew comedy. And he got people with talent to work with him, and that I'm thinking in terms of actors. And fortunately, I guess he felt the same way about the writers, because we went along for all those years as a family. We understood each other.
And what a family it was. You were all together, it seems like, for all of those 25 years.
Yes. You consider Don Wilson, Phil Harris, the writers, they're all 25 to 30, 35 years.
And, you know, you had Mel Blanc and, of course, Mary Livingston, and you had Rochester, and let's not forget Frank Nelson.
Yes! Oh, yes. Oh, mister. Yes. Oh, you again.
Did you specifically write things just for Frank Nelson? In other words, knowing that he would be able to do his thing with that, or did you just write straight and then let him interpret it?
No, we wrote, when we worked on a script, we wrote as though we were the people talking or performing, and we wrote in that style. I don't think that Frank, maybe on a rare occasion, changed lines, just took it as it came off the paper.
The show, of course, was very, very funny, and it had the running gags. Was yours the first show that had the running gags?
Well, I believe so. If we weren't the first to do it, I think we were the first to perfect it, in that we got it down to, I was going to say to a science, but that's probably not true. Other shows have tried... Other shows have tried the running gag, but this is some, and they sit down, they block out the show, and they get a gag up front, then they figure they've got to get it a playback to it, four or five pages down the track, and then again four or five pages up further along. It doesn't work. Running gags happen accidentally.
Now, I want to get into how Anaheim, Azusa, and Cucamonga came about. But for our listeners who don't remember, let's go back a little bit and listen to this, perhaps greatest of all the running gags on the Jack Benny Show.
Ah, gee, Mary, it was awfully nice of you to drive me down to the station.
Oh, that's all right, Jack. I wanted to see you off.
Yeah, well, let's go in.
Train leaving on track 5 for Anaheim. Azusa and Cucamonga.
You know, Jack, there's something fascinating about a railroad station. So many people going so many places.
Yeah. Mary, I'm going over to the newsstand to get a magazine. You wait for me here.
Okay.
Attention, please, attention. To facilitate the holiday rush, all passengers going to Cucamonga may have their choice of trains, local, express, or mule. Have your feed bags validated.
I've still got time to get my magazine. He hasn't announced my train yet.
Attention, please. Attention. Train leaving on track 1 for Baltimore and Washington. It's leaving now, so you better run.
Well, I better go over and get that magazine before the train leaves.
Attention, please. Attention. Train leaving on track 3, all the way to Schenectady. Just one stop at Kansas City.
Yeah, I got to get a newspaper, too. I want to see if they have anything in it about
Jack, what time does your train leave?
I don't know. It's not on the hit parade yet. Nothing, nothing.
Attention, please, attention. Train leaving on track 2 for Asheville, Nashville, Kalamazoo takes on water at Waterloo.
Mary, I'm going to stop at the mat.
Watch it, Sam.
The greatest running gag of all. George, how did that come about?
Well, that was about 1945. We were going to New York to do a couple of shows, and this meant that we had to get there by train, and it just happens on this thing. But I didn't know you were going to play this one. I just had an idea that if we went to the railroad station, that we could have some fun. And we started out with the train announcer, Anaheim, Azusa, and Cucamonga. And from that time on, the spot played so well that we used it every time we traveled.
Now, what made Anaheim, Azusa, and Cucamonga funny?
Well,
they're funny-sounding names, I guess.
That's part of it, yes. Just Anaheim, Azusa, and Cuckoo. They're not even on the same railroad. Actually, two of them are.
But Cucamonga got moved by the freeway.
Anaheim is off.
It's a Disneyland.
Right. But Cucamonga is
Cucamonga
on the line. Yeah.
Yeah.
So now I'll tell you a little story about this. We did the railroad station every time we traveled.
Mm-hmm.
So I had an idea one time, went to Jack. I said, next time we travel. He said, well, we're going to do that this week. I said, I know. Here's what we do. You are so fed up with going into that railroad station and having all this trouble. They drive you nuts. Frank Nelson gets on you. The train announcer gets on you. Everybody, you can't buy a magazine. They drive you crazy. You can't validate your tickets and so forth. So I said, here's what we're going to do. We'll go to the railroad station. And you go in, and we started this way. They walked up to the door of the station, and he says, gee, Mary, I can't do it. I just can't go through that again. She said, but Jack, we're going to New York. You have to get on the train. He says, oh, I guess so. So they open the door, and you just hear nice crowd noises. And Jack says, you see, Mary, wait a minute. That train announcer didn't say anything. Now we had a beautiful train announcer say, ladies and gentlemen, your attention, please, and gave a classy announcement for the trains. Jack says, gee, I can't. This is marvelous. Oh, this is great. He says, well, I got to validate my ticket. Went up to validate the ticket where normally we would find Frank Nelson.
Mm-hmm.
Very nice man. Says, yes, sir, what can I do for you? He says, I don't understand it. We did everything nice, beautiful. No trouble. He says, gee, Mary, this is wonderful. We get on the train. Train takes off. We're just getting started, and they're all in the drawing room or the compartment, and they're talking, and Mary says, oh, darn it. Jack says, what's the matter? She says, I forgot to buy a magazine. He says, don't worry about it. We stop at Pasadena, 5 minutes. I'll get off the train, run in, be right back out. Train came to a stop. Jack got off, ran to the station, opened the doors, and we heard train leaving on track 5 for Anaheim, Azusa, and Cucamonga. Now, the interesting thing about it is that when we didn't do it first, you could hear the audience go, oh.
Yeah, right. Right.
They expected it.
Of course, of course.
On the next week's show, George, didn't they all go to New York and meet him when he got off the train there?
I think so.
Yeah.
All right.
We're going to take a break. We'll be right back with George Balzer for 25 years, the chief writer for the Jack Benny program, along with Larry and John Gassman of Spurtvac. And then,
all right,
we'll start taking some calls here shortly, so now's your chance to get in. George Balzer is my guest for 25 years, chief writer for the Jack Benny program, and, of course, Larry and John Gassman of Spurtvac. George, how did your association come about with Jack Benny? And tell us about yourself.
Well,
what's your background?
Let me go back quite a bit. I guess I'm one of those who broke the myth that in order to think funny, say funny, write funny, you had to come from New York, specifically Brooklyn. Well, I didn't come from New York. I was born in Erie, Pennsylvania. My father brought the family west in the early 20s, and about 1926 we settled in the San Fernando Valley, and I've been there ever since. After finishing high school, I went to grammar school, Winnetka Grammar School, Canoga Park High School. At that time, the school and the town was both named Owensmouth.
At that time, you were out in the sticks.
You betcha. Yeah. It was beautiful. It was all farm country. And marvelous. We had the best years of my life was spent out there as a young man. But after graduating high school, I had a chance to listen to a lot of radio, and I began to say to myself, I think I can write comedy. And without having any connections at all, I wrote 5 scripts that I felt was along the Benny pattern. And then when I finished that, I didn't know what to do with them. I had never been in a radio studio, and I just kind of made contacts wherever I could. I kind of watched them build the NBC studios at Sunset and Vine and CBS studios on Gower. And I used to sit around the lobby there. And, well, anyway, as time went on, nothing happened for about a year or so. Then I got a lead, which got me a job for a short time writing material for Bob Burns on the old Kraft, Bing Crosby Kraft Music Hall. And then I worked for a while Signal Carnival. And then I went to Burns and Allen. And with Burns and Allen, when they first went with Lever Brothers, and that was the occasion when George and Gracie first became married, became man and wife on the air rather than just a vaudeville team. That's where I met my partner, Sam Perrin. And then Sam and I took the summer show for Burns and Allen, which was Tommy Riggs and Betty Lou. I don't know whether you remember them or not. But it was a man who had a very high voice, and he called that voice Betty Lou, and his own normal voice was Uncle Tommy. So we were supposed to take that for 13 weeks. At the end of about 11 weeks, our rating was sufficient, so the sponsor kept us on. We ran that into 65 weeks. About the 63rd week, we got the call to go and join Jack Benny. So that's we had to go to New York. Jack was overseas in North Africa with the USO troops entertaining the armed services.
All right, when you saw Jack Benny for the first time, do you remember what he told you?
No, I really don't. I think it was just a very quiet hello and a handshake, a very gentle, soft handshake. And when that happened, I'm sure that neither one of us had reason to believe that we had started a relationship that was the last 25 years. And shortly after Sam and I got there, we were joined by two other writers, of John Tackerberry, Mill Josephsburg. And here's the kind of a mix we had now. There was Sam, myself, Milton, Tack. Tack was a Texan. I don't know what else to say about that. Milt was a press agent. Sam was a musician, played drums. And I got started after school in the family laundry business. I broke away from that to get into writing. And even as the years went by, our past occupations, you could distinguish us in that Milt was still a press agent, only he was down to one client himself. Tack was still a Texan. Sam walked a little sideways as though he were still carrying a bass drum on his hip. And from the laundry beginning, I guess I was the only one with a clean shirt. So
you had your ticket, right?
So that was right. they gave it back to me.
My guest, George Balzer, writer for the Jack Benny program for 25 years, Larry and John Gassman of Spurred Back. We'll be right back. I'm Ray Brame, and this is KBC Talk Radio, AM 790. George Balzer and Larry and John Gassman are with us. Larry and John, of course, are with Spurred Back. That's the Society to Preserve and Encourage Radio Drama, Variety, and Comedy. And George Balzer, for 25 years, the writer, the driving force behind the Jack Benny program, both radio and television. You were, 22 years on radio and about 16 years on television, I guess?
We had an overlapping period there where we did both radio and television.
All right, we're talking about Jack Benny, the miserly one, the tightwad. How did that develop?
Well, that was started before we... before we joined the show, and it was just such a great facet of his character and got such big laughs. We would do such things as, let's say, for instance, they were in a coffee shop. And when the Don, Phil, Dennis, Mary, and Jack, well, when the check came, Phil says, "Let me have it." Don Z says, "No, no, let me have it, Phil." Dennis says, "Wait a minute, it's my turn." Phil says, "I insist, I want it." Don says, "Give it to me." Dennis says, "I want it." Mary leans over and says, "Jack, why don't you take it?" He says, "Mary, I'm not even in the argument." And then another one, same kind of a situation, let's say walking out of down the street, the same group. Mary notices Jack is no longer beside him, beside her, so she looks back, and there's Jack, maybe 100 yards behind him, down on his hands and knees, looking for something. She says, "Jack, what happened?" He says, "I lost a quarter." She says, "Kids, we better go back and help him. He'll be there all day." So they go back. She says, "Jack, are you sure?" He says, "Mary, I lost a quarter." So they all got down their hands and knees. They're looking, and Dennis says, "Oh, boy, look what I found." Jack says, "You find my quarter?" He says, "No, I found a dime." Jack says, "Oh, well, in that case, give it to me and you can owe me 15 cents.
Now, how do you work up a gag like that? Get the punchline?
Well, I will confess that that last joke we never used on the air.
You didn't use it on the air?
Never used it. It went through my mind, and this happens all the time.
Uh-huh.
Material we could use on the Benny Show, which we can no longer use, still goes through my mind. And one day, about 2 months ago, I'm just driving along. Don't ask me why.
And you thought of a line.
That whole joke just laid itself out.
It took 40 years, but you got
there. I just can't explain, how and why.
It would just develop.
It's to do this, you have to be born with a natural way of just seeing the funny side of everything.
And turning things around.
Yeah, just if you can write comedy if you can see something funny in what might be a very tragic situation. There's something funny if you want to dig it out.
My guest is George Balzer, for 25 years, writer for the Jack Benny program. With us is Larry and John Gassman of Spurred Back. We'll be right back. I'm Ray Brame, and this is KBC Talk Radio, AM 790. My guest is George Balzer, writer for the Jack Benny program for 25 years. Also in the studio, Larry and John Gassman of the Society to Preserve and Encourage Radio Drama, Variety, and Comedy, Spurdvac. George, we were talking about Mary Livingston, not only Jack's wife, but also another very important part of the Jack Benny program. And the letters from Mama.
Well, as I say, we have one when it's ready to roll. Is it ready to go? Yeah. Well, then this is the type of letter that she would get from Mama.
All right, let's listen.
Oh, a letter from your mother, eh?
Uh-huh.
Well, what does the Ma Kettle of Plainfield have to say?
Well, just a second, I'll read it to you.
Okay.
My darling daughter, Mary, as you'll notice from the stationery, I'm writing this from the Plainfield Hotel. The reason we're here is because 3 days ago, we shut the house up and had it fumigated on account of the pests. We got rid of them, all except your Uncle Lou and Cousin Willie.
Well, it's about time.
We really
your
don't...
Your mother didn't start out very funny, incidentally. Go ahead.
We really don't mind Willie, as he's very little bother.
Mm-hmm.
He spends all his time down in the basement with his printing press. He has to work night and day because his biggest competitor is the United States government.
Your mother writes them all right. You just can't read them. I was blaming the mother. Go ahead, Mary. I'm sorry.
Oh, there's more.
Oh, well.
Anyway, Mary, dear, I kind of like Willie because he's so sweet and thoughtful. Every Mother's Day, he gives me a $10 bill with my picture on it.
Well, I guess I was right in the first place.
Now for a paragraph or two about your sister, Babe.
Ah, good. This is the part I like.
Since the warm weather is here, your sister, Babe, got herself one of those new French bathing suits. She tried it on yesterday, and I haven't seen so much of Babe since the doctor said it's a girl. She's very happy with the suit. Next month, she's entering a swimming contest.
A contest? Gee, I didn't even know that she could swim.
Oh, sure, Jack. Babe's a regular mermaid.
Well, I've noticed the resemblance, except the wrong half looks like a fish. I'm funnier than your mother today. Continue with the letter, Mary.
Okay. Mary, dear, you'll be happy to know that Babe is also taking dancing lessons from Arthur Murray.
Well.
She got a swell deal, too. He teaches her dancing and she fixes his plumbing.
I knew she could do it. You know, Mary, your mother writes some of the funniest letters, though, I've ever heard.
Before we go to the next, let me say that there was a pretty good example of Jack's ability to ad lib, but that was something that he rarely did, and the reason for that is he had too much respect for the script. At times he was prompted to, he saw an ad lib that he figured, wait a minute, if I say that, it spoils what's coming up two pages later. In this particular instance, it was such a separate segment that it didn't make any difference, and there he got a chance.
And what a punchline.
To work.
All right, let's take a call from Hollandale, Florida. We have Tom on the line. Good morning, Tom. You're on with George Balzer, Larry, and John Gassman.
Good morning. It's amazing how some of the material that was written for that show is talked about even today, just as if it happened a week or so ago.
Well, it's a pleasure to hear that indeed, and if I may, I have to agree that the material does hold up.
It certainly does.
And it brought entertainment to so many people, and those who remember it are very kind with their comments.
Are you responsible for that very, very funny one? I think it was supposed to take place at Ronald Coleman's house. Ronald and Benita?
Yes.
And I forget exactly how it was set up, but the end line was something about Ronald Coleman's wife says to him, "Have you seen Phil Harris's band?" And all right, go ahead.
He says, he's a musician. Says no, he just leads the orchestra. I'm not sure. You know,
was talking about Ronald says, "Please, I'm eating."
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yes. Well, you know, we used the Colemans quite a bit. The idea of using the Colemans came from Jack himself, and he just felt that if he could get a real classy couple to be his neighbors, that we could then use them on a few scripts and see how it went. And it went so beautifully that over a period of, maybe 4 or 5 years, we used them 3 or 4 times a season.
Every time I heard Ronald Coleman, it was, "If I were king."
Yes, yes.
Are you fellas responsible for the program's trip to the vault around Christmas time? Was that written by you men?
Yes, yes. We
they were hilarious.
We wrote all those vaults.
What to them is... It wasn't Christmas if it wasn't a trip to the vault.
You have to go to... Well, he was going to do his Christmas shopping for about 20 people, and he had to go down and get
$5. Yes.
Right.
So...
One of his attendants there said, "Is the war over?" And Jack Benny says, "Yes, the war is over." And something, "How is Mr. Lincoln?"
That's right.
Tom, on the screen it says that you want to ask about the longest laugh on radio.
Yeah, that was supposedly the one about... your money or your life.
We're glad that...
Joke?
Well,
all right, tell you what, Tom. Listen on the air, because we're going to go through that.
We're going to disclose that whole situation.
All right.
And we'll talk about it.
All right. Thank you very much, Tom. In fact, let's play it right now. The very famous, "Your Money or Your Life."
Hey, Bud. Bud.
Huh?
Got a match?
Match? Yes, I have one right here.
Don't make a move. This is a stick-up.
What?
You heard me.
Mister. Mister, put down that gun.
Shut up. Now, come on. Your money or your life? Look, Bud. I said your money or your life.
I'm thinking it over.
And give me a wallet.
All right. That's supposedly the longest laugh in radio.
Now, I'll tell you what happened on that. That is the most publicized joke that we ever did. And the reason for that is because at that time, John Crosby, the radio critic and columnist, was doing a piece on our show. So for that week, he stayed very close to us, went through rehearsals and also the broadcast, and that joke was in that particular broadcast. Well, it did get a big laugh, and he jumped on it and wrote considerable words about that joke, and other columnists pick it up, and it just seemed to grow. Now, that joke was never written. It happened, and it was recognized. And the way it happened was Milton Tack were working on that particular segment that week, and they got the burglar saying to Jack, "Your money or your life," but they had no answer.
Mm-hmm.
And Milt paced up and down trying to think of something. Tack was lying on the couch, and it looked like he was half asleep. And Milt is thinking, nothing's happening. And he looked at Tack, relaxed. And he says, "Tack, for God's sake, say something." And Tack, in defense, said, "I'm thinking it over." And Milt says, "Wait a minute. That's the line." So they put the line in the script. Well, so when I said the joke was never written, it was recognized and got all that publicity. Now, a joke that I think... And Jack says, at one time for Grant with the Hollywood Reporter, Hank Grant, Jack was asked to do a column. And he wrote the column based on the 10 biggest laughs he ever got. And he started off by saying, it was not money or your life. And then he named 10 jokes. And the last joke was a joke from Mary. It was Mary who got the biggest laugh.
Really?
That Jack ever had on stage, screen, radio, television, anywhere. And it was a situation where we had Dorothy Kirsten.
Okay, now we have that. Now,
all
tell
right.
You what, let us take a break, and we'll come right back, and we'll hear it.
All right, fine.
All right, my guest, George Balzer, writer for 25 years for the Jack Benny program, along with Larry and John Gassman of Spurred Vac. My guest is George Balzer, chief writer for the Jack Benny program for 25 years, along with Larry and John Gassman of SPIRDVAC, the Society to Preserve and Encourage Radio Drama, Variety, and Comedy. Got it out. That's the longest title I've ever seen, but we'll get into that later. George, we were talking about the longest laugh not being Your Money or Your Life, but one with Mary Livingston and Dorothy Kirsten.
That's correct. Dorothy Kirsten,
the great singer.
The great operatic singer. She was our guest, and it was out of a routine done between Don and Miss Kirsten, with Mary standing there, and Jack also nearby. So if you want to run that, why, we'll...
Let's take a listen to the longest laugh, not Your Money or Your Life, but this one.
Oh, Miss Kirsten, this is Mary Livingston.
How do you do, Miss Livingston?
How do you do?
And this is Dennis Day.
Hello, Dennis.
Glad to know you, Miss Kirsten.
Dennis, you must be very proud to be associated with a man of Mr. Benny's stature and importance.
In a bathing suit, he looks like a spider.
Mr. Day. He's such a kid. You know?
Oh, Miss Kirsten, I wanted to tell you that I saw you in Madame Butterfly Wednesday afternoon, and I thought your performance was simply magnificent.
Well, thanks awfully. It's not awfully nice and kind of you, Mr. Wilson. But who could help singing Puccini? It's so expressive, and particularly in the last act, starting with the Allegro Vivacissimo.
Well, now, that's being very modest, Miss Kirsten, but not every singer has the necessary bel canto and flexibility or range to cope with the high tessitura of the first act.
Thank you, Mr. Wilson. And don't you think that in the aria Un bel di vedremo that the strings played the con molto passione exceptionally fine and with great sostenendo?
Well, I thought...
Oh, shut up!
Is the longest laugh.
That's the longest, biggest laugh Jack ever got, by his own judgment.
That's very interesting. So we're all learning something tonight. All right, let's take a call from Marvin. Marvin of the movies. Hello, Marvin.
Hello again.
Hello, John. Yes, you're on with George, Larry, and John. Go ahead.
Good morning, gentlemen.
Good morning to you.
Benny Kubelski was a very funny man. A lot of people don't know that he was born on Valentine's Day in 1894. He's just, if he was still living, he'd be 6 years shy of 100 years old.
No, he'd be 39.
Yes.
You know, some of the classic bits that was written for the Jack Benny Show... Mel Blanc, Zoo.
We're gonna touch on that in a little bit, but go ahead. Yes.
The feud with Fred Allen, Buck Benny, Andy Devine, Hiya Buck. Doggone, there were so many good things. And Mary Livingston, people don't realize, being as nervous as she was about performing. Many people don't realize that Jack Benny originally was not supposed to do the radio show. It was Benny Rubin who was going to do the radio show.
That's correct.
He didn't want to do it, so he talked to, I believe it was NBC, was it not?
It was. Well, yes, it was NBC.
He went to the moguls at NBC and said, there's a young comedian that you people should see. They looked at him and they loved him right away. Again, it's unfortunate that there are so many young people here today that were never able to hear and see Jack Benny. I have probably on video maybe 45 or 50 of his funniest films. And every once in a while I'll put one on. The Horn Blows at Midnight, on the radio show, on the TV show, they would always knock that film.
Well, that was our... we used that for comedy purposes for years.
Great running gag.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And George Washington slept here for one of his films.
Right. Yeah.
The one that I like as far as the TV show is the one at Christmas time when Jack is shopping for a gift.
Yeah.
Is it for Rochester? Yeah, it's a gift for Rochester.
I think so, yeah.
And Mel Blanc is the guy behind the counter. And finally, after he's unwrapped it and put it back together again about three or four times, it's gone in the mail. Mm-hmm. He's retrieved it. He finally commits suicide. And,
for Don Wilson.
If I remember correctly, it was a gift, and I'm not sure who, but the issue was. It was shoelaces.
Cufflinks.
Cufflinks.
Shoelaces first.
For Don Wilson.
Metal tips
and the debate
tips.
Was metal tips or
right.
plastic tips.
It was always for Don Wilson every year.
Well, there was one that had the card, whether he should say something
right.
out of the card.
Yes, yes.
And then you have to talk about the Maxwell. And
We're going to do all of that, Marvin.
To talk about the bear.
Carmichael. Well, not Carmichael was on for a couple of years.
Mm-hmm. Then he ate the gas man.
And that's right. Yes. Yeah, but Roch mm-hmm. used to say, what happened to the gas man?
Right.
Yeah.
We're going to do it, Marvin. Thanks for the call. To Akron, Ohio, and Scott. Hello, Scott. You're on with George Balzer, Larry, and John Gassman.
Well, first of all, let me thank the gentlemen for the comedy they've given us over the years. I'm 23 years old, and my question is, I'd like to know what the relationship really was between Jack Benny and George Burns.
What the relationship was?
Were they really the friends that they...
They were great friends. They were friends coming up through vaudeville, and they remained friends all the way through until Jack passed away. Very close friends.
I can gather that from what they did on tapes that I can get of the old radio days. They did some fantastic bits with George and Gracie. And
yes. Well, of course, we did the bits where Jack dressed like Gracie because Gracie missed the show and Jack had to take her place. And that worked out very well for us.
All right, hold on just a second, Scott. My guest is George Balzer, writer for the Jack Benny program for 25 years. I'm Ray Bream, and this is KBC Talk Radio, AM 790. All right, go ahead, Scott.
The one that comes to mind to me is the Brown Derby scene where, and you were talking about this earlier in another skit, I guess, but... they're in the Brown Derby, and they're arguing over who's going to pick up the check. Did you have anything to do with that?
Well, did I have anything to do with it?
Or anyone.
Well, he wrote the material.
Sure. All I can say is I had something to do with everything that Jack did. I joined Jack in 1943. And from that time on, I was involved with everything he did. That doesn't mean I wrote everything he did, but I was involved with it in that I either did write it or I was in on writing it with other people and so forth.
Well, I want to thank you for that. I want to thank you for the company that you've given.
You're very welcome indeed.
All right, thank you, Scott, for the call. To put a half-hour show together once a week, it must be a terrible grind.
It was such a grind that when we went off the air on Sunday radio, we didn't know what we were going to do the next Sunday.
Oh, my.
And we wouldn't give it a thought until
Monday
we would take off. On Tuesday we'd kind of start kicking it around in our minds, trying to get something going, and then
together or separately.
Usually separately.
Mm-hmm. I want to ask you too, and we'll do that next hour. Did you have any dry runs? You know, a lot of the comedy shows, Red Skelton and Jimmy Durante, they used to do dry runs just to see what jokes hit and which jokes did not.
No, we never did that.
All right, we'll be right back. Stay tuned. George Balzer is my guest, along with Larry and John Gassman. Is spurred back. Stay tuned for the news.
KABC Talk Radio 790.
This is Talk Radio. I'm Ray Brain. My guest is George Balzer, writer for the Jack Benny program for 25 years. Also in the studio are Larry and John Gassman of Spurdback, the Society to Preserve and Encourage Radio Drama, Variety, and Comedy. Stay with us. In Los Angeles, the number is 520, followed by TALK, T-A-L-K. All Talk Radio 79 numbers are followed by the word TALK. Orange County, 714 area, dial 750. And the 213 area, dial 448. The South Bay area, 679. And the San Fernando Valley, dial 990. And then,
George
talk.
Balzer, tell me about the two different broadcasts. In those days, you had an East Coast show and a West Coast show, and they were 3 hours apart.
That's right. After we finished the show going directly east, why, then Jack would, we'd all sit around the circle with our scripts, and Jack would go over it. We over it very with a like a fine-tooth comb, and we would try and make a line here, a line there, a little funnier, maybe change a joke or two, just to keep it, to try and improve it a bit, and also to make it fresher for the performers. That was the basic idea.
I've heard that, I don't know if they were funnier or what, but I've heard that certainly the second shows were a little looser. They were... Well, it seems like in that 3 hours, some of the characters, the cast of the shows, would go to the nearest watering hole, and they'd come back, and they...
You know, I honestly don't know how much of that went on, but it's possible. But we did have fun, I know that.
I was talking to Larry and John here, and you were telling me about the Burn Show, I think.
We were talking about the Fred Allen Show.
Oh, the Fred Allen Show.
Yeah, and frequently between the two shows,
the East
and West Coast show. Well, first of all, Jack would go back and look at laughs to see how mm-hmm. he could construct them to make them even funnier. He'd go back and listen to discs of the first show, mm-hmm. and he'd watch the laugh, and if it was a good laugh, he'd amplify, you know, and leave the joke in.
Mm-hmm.
But we were talking about Fred Allen, and we have West Coast shows and East Coast shows for Fred Allen. And frequently, Fred, who loved to ad-lib, would ad-lib at different spots. So, naturally, you almost got two different shows from the first show, which was for the East, and the second show, which was for the West.
Now,
fascinating to listen to.
I'll bet. Now, tell me about the way you put this thing together.
Well,
We left you on Monday.
Yeah, all right. Well, here's what happened. When the show went off the air on Sunday, we had no idea what we were going to do for the next week. So Monday we would just kind of forget about it. On Tuesday we would start to think, give it some thought as to what could be a possible idea to hang a show on. Well, somehow by late afternoon or evening, the four of us would contact each other by phone and discuss it, and we'd come up with what we thought was a workable idea, and then we'd call Jack. He'd be home in Beverly Hills. We'd call him and say, Jack, we got an idea here that might work. What do you think? And we'd tell him what it was, and usually he would say, yeah, that sounds pretty good. Go ahead and write it. So then on Wednesday and Thursday, Sam and I would write our half the show. Milton Sack would write their half. And at the end of Thursday, we would contact each other by phone, and we would have no idea what they wrote. They would have no idea what we wrote, except it in a general way. Mm-hmm. They'd know nothing about the dialogue. And we would...
What day does the panic set in?
Well, I'll tell you when the panic sets in. It's panic. So anyway, this is now Thursday, when we both finished our assignment, both teams had finished the assignment. Now, we would call them and say, what line did you finish with? And they might say, well, we had Jack and Mary walking out the front door on their way to the store, let's say. And we'd say, fine. And what did they say? They'd give us that line of dialogue. Then we would pick up and make our half fit right into that dialogue.
Mm-hmm.
Now we've got a whole rough script. On Friday morning, we'd go over to Jack's home in Beverly Hills. He'd meet us there about 10 o'clock, and we'd start from the very top, page for page, and clean that script up. Mm-hmm. If we were in good shape, it may take an hour and a half, 2 hours. If it wasn't in very good shape, it may take 4, 5, 6 hours. But by Friday night, it was ready.
What about a recurring line, you know, that you wanted to use again, that you may have used on page 3, and then you bring it back again on page 20, but there are two different teams writing the show?
Well, all right. A running gag, it will develop itself. If we found something in their spot, if they had the first spot, that we could put in later, then we would do that. we would do that. But we'd get that all ready for Mimeo. Then we would send it down to NBC. That would be ready then Saturday morning. We'd go down. We'd have our reading. Then we'd go into the room and just Jack and the four writers.
Dress rehearsal was what day?
On Sunday.
Before the show?
Yes, uh-huh. Mm.
Very interesting. That tight.
Oh, sure. If we have time, I'll tell you a little incident while we were sitting around a table working on the script.
All right, we'll do that in a minute. Let's take a call from David in Salt Lake City. David, good morning. You're on with George Balzer.
All right, I'm the Grouch, Ray.
The Grouch?
Yeah.
Okay.
I have reason to believe that Jack Benny was a very generous man.
You're correct.
I couldn't prove it, but...
Well, let me inject something here. Generous, not only from a monetary point of view, but as a person. He was generous, my gosh. But with his feelings, he was just a fine man.
He visited a hospital where I was when I came back to the States in 1945.
And where was that?
In San Diego.
Yeah, oh, yes. Well, in 45, I was with him.
In San Diego.
Uh-huh.
And he visited the ward I was on.
Uh-huh.
And he spent a couple hours with us.
Yes, whenever we traveled around like that, why we would do a show from one of the bases during the war, and then and then Jack would either before or after the show go over and visit the hospitals.
This particular time, there's somebody right here standing there pulling his pant legs up like it's getting awful deep here. We were in a bull session.
Uh-huh.
Somebody recognized him.
Oh.
And he spent, as I say, at least 2 hours there with us.
Well, that's Jack.
On each one of her beds, there was an envelope with a brand new $10 bill in it.
Oh, marvelous.
But it had been delivered by a messenger.
Uh-huh.
I always suspicioned that it came from Jack Benny.
Well, could very easily have come from Jack.
Thank you very much, Grouch. You were going to tell a story about... we were talking about the dress rehearsal.
Well, we were talking about the day that we cleaned up the script, getting ready for Sunday's broadcast.
Right.
On this particular day, now I hadn't been with the show very long, but on this particular Saturday afternoon, we're sitting there at the table at NBC, and Jack had gone over, 4 or 5 pages. Then he turned the page of the script, and he says, "Fellas, I want a new joke in here." And there's silence from us.
Mm-hmm.
He said, I want something bigger. Something more meaningful. Silence. I want something that'll really tie this whole thing up. Silence. And I leaned over to him and I said, "Jack, we'll get you a new joke." He says, "Oh, you agree with me, huh?" I said, "No, but it's possible that the four of us can be wrong." Now, that's a pretty smart-alecky thing to say. But he slid right off his chair.
Pounded the floor.
And he sat there on the floor. And after a while, he's screaming, just screaming. And after a while, he got up. He says, "I wouldn't change that joke now for $1 million. And he didn't. It went on the air. It played beautifully. He looked up at us at the booth as if to say, "You cocky." But it was just great.
We'll be right back with George Balzer, also in the studio, Larry and John Gassman of Spurred Back. I'm Ray Bream, and this is KBC Talk Radio, AM 790. My guest is the writer for the Jack Benny program for 25 years, George Balzer, and also in the studio, Larry and John Gassman of Spurred Back. That's the Society to Preserve and Encourage Radio Drama, Variety, and Comedy. Don't try to remember it. I still can't. But anyway, we have Simon on the phone here from Beverly Hills, California. Simon, good morning. You're on with George Balzer.
Hello.
Hello.
I met Jack Benny a few times in San Francisco when I was the manager of the St. Francis Hotel drug store and liquor store.
Uh-huh, yes, we used to stay there.
Yeah, and he used to come there, and one day he said, tell one of the guys to take this package to my room. And when the guy went there, he gave him a $20 bill. That was 1948 or something like that. I can't remember exactly what it was.
Uh-huh.
Okay. Okay, now I own the Beverly Hills Liquor Castle, and every Saturday night at 9 o'clock, I put the Jack Benny Show. I have a crowd of people listening to it.
For those who don't know, there's a major radio station in the L.A. market that plays the Benny Show every Saturday night.
Okay. We play for about half an hour. As soon as Charlie McCarty comes, all the customers run away. Something more I want to ask you.
Yes.
Every time when the Jack Benny Show is over, you know what he says? We are running a little late. So
yes.
We're a little late, folks.
That's right. We're a little late, folks. Good night.
Whether you were on time or not, you're always a little late. I was going to ask you, stole my line there, Simon.
Yeah.
But thanks a lot. Why did he use that?
Well, that's standard. That's a standard on that particular
syndicated package cart.
But he didn't always use it.
Well, actually, we usually ran a little late.
Oh, you did?
Yeah. Usually there was a little more to say, but he would just get in, not part of it, but whatever he got in was complete, but there was still more to it. We'd just get that in, and we're a little late, folks.
So that was his part of his sign-off, we're a little late, folks.
We always had the bumper room there.
All right, okay. Let's go to Raleigh, Durham, North Carolina, and Hal. Hello, Hal. You're on with George Balzer and also Larry and John Gassman.
Top of the morning to you, gentlemen.
Good morning.
And to you.
Ray, you know I'm the all-night man at PTF.
That's right.
And
how's the modulator, Ryan?
Yeah, coming through 4x4.
Good.
As usual. I won't even talk to you about our technical stuff as we usually get into. I want to know about Rochester.
Well, we're going to get to Roch, and I think we're going to cover the story on Roch pretty completely before too long.
Okay. Are you going 3 hours this morning?
Yes.
Good, good, good. You know, with the new DB system we got, we get 2 hours of it, and then I usually end up short. You know, I have to play these shows back on weekend.
Now, we're going to be the full 3 hours.
Good. So now I'll have an extra show for next weekend. Now, cut that out.
Yes. For heaven's sake, yes.
Where did that come from?
Sing, Dennis.
Oh, I don't know. It was just one of those things that developed as we went along.
And it wasn't from the same line being used over. I noticed I heard you just mention the crossover from one to one line over to the from the first 15 minutes to the second 15.
Well, that's what we call the running gag.
Yeah.
And in most of our shows, somehow or other, without being planned, running gags would develop. And we're gonna get to that a little bit later too, as to how the running gag developed and what it sounded like. We'll play part of that.
Well, we'll be with you till 6 in the morning.
Very good. Thank you very much, Hal. Take care.
Bye-bye.
All right, we'll be right back. My guest, George Balzer, Larry and John Gassman. I'm Ray Bream, and this is KBC Talk Radio, AM 790. George Balzer, a writer for the Jack Benny Program, chief writer for 25 years. Also in the studio, Larry and John Gassman of SPIRDVAC, which is the Society to Preserve... I'm trying to do it by memory.
Good luck.
entertainment? No. To encourage radio, drama, variety, and comedy.
It gives you an audio hernia to say that, doesn't it?
It sure does.
Yeah.
Anyway, let's get to some more of the outtakes from the Benny program. Of course, one of the stalwarts was Phil Harris. Band leader Phil Harris, but that was a big thing about being called band leader, right?
Well, you see, Phil certainly was a musician. Phil did have an orchestra, but that's not why he was hired to be on the Benny Show. Phil was hired for his character, the curly-haired, cocky, egotistical...
Frank Remley.
Just one of those young men about town, you know, think that he was God's gift to women. And
it's interesting, though, in the very beginning, he was very soft-spoken, and that loud character evolved.
Well, it did.
Mm-hmm.
And then he became, character-wise, a big drinker. The boys in the band were the same, a bunch of ruffians.
Mm-hmm. They all had to report to their parole officers,
right.
Remember?
That's right. Yeah, that's right. And as Jack would sometimes introduce him, Phil Harris and his international orchestra.
Let's take a listen to the unforgettable Phil Harris.
Okay, folks, the show may be flopping, but now Harris is here to start things popping, so shower me with that sun-kissed applause. Yeah. Well, I wish Phil
Well, I wish you wouldn't sneak in here like that. Now, let me ask you something. Why didn't you show up for rehearsal yesterday? Where were you?
Well, I'm sorry, Jackson. You see, I couldn't get a room in Palm Springs, so I'm staying out at the B Bar H.
Oh, the B Bar H, huh? Yeah. What are you living in, a room or a cabin?
In the
in
bar.
The bar.
It's out there, too.
To get that, you know. You must have loved that, Phil.
No, no, not anymore, partner. I'm on the wagon.
You on the wagon?
Yes, sirree. All I take is 2 drinks a day.
Phil, if you're on the wagon, you shouldn't drink anything.
Look, Jackson, my stomach's like a steel mill. You can shut it down, but don't let the fire go out.
I always loved Phil Harris.
Yeah, well, now, in keeping with that last joke, Phil came over to Jack's house one in our script, and he was telling Jack, he says that he and the boys were in the band were out on a party the night before, and between the 16 of them, why, they'd killed about 4 cases of scotch. And Jack says, for heaven's sakes, Phil, if they drank that much liquor, how in the world did they get home? He says, well, easy. He says, you know that white line down the center of the street? And Jack says, oh, they followed it? He says, followed it. They held on to it.
Okay. As we know, this past week, Dennis Day, a dear man, passed away. Lou Gehrig's disease. And he was a guest on this program a couple of years ago, and we played a lot of the great excerpts. But Dennis was a real gem, and how did that line, oh, Dennis Sing, come about?
Well, I don't know. It was just, Dennis would do something which would reach a peak, and Jack couldn't take it any longer. He would just say, Dennis Sing, you know. So you're right. Dennis was a tremendous talent. He was a wonderful mimic, impressionist.
Mm-hmm. Great ear.
And had the character that he played for us as the young, silly kid. He's big, just a great performer for us. We could use him any place.
I read where he was discovered by Rudolph Frimmel.
Well, I don't know.
But that's what one of the obituaries said.
Yeah.
I didn't know that myself.
I really didn't know as to that detail, but losing him, I had the privilege of working with Dennis not only on the Benny Show, but after that was passé. Dennis and I remained very close, and I would work with him whenever he would need something. As a matter of fact, I worked with him just about a year or maybe 15 months ago on the last thing he did. He went back to Holyoke, Massachusetts to receive an award, and I assisted there with getting material and so forth and so on, and it was there in the parade when he first noticed his legs were giving him trouble.
All right, let's take an outtake from the Jack Benny program with Dennis Day.
Come in.
Oh, fine. Hello, Dennis.
Hello, Mr. Benny. I wasn't doing anything, so I thought I'd come over and see how you're getting along.
Well, that's very nice of you. Have a seat.
Thanks. How do you feel?
Not so hot. I'm dizzy. My eyes are bleary. I'm weak, and I ache all over.
Well, you're not a kid anymore.
Now, wait a minute. There's only one thing the matter with me, Dennis. I've got a cold.
A cold, he says.
What's the matter with you? Haven't you ever had a cold?
Oh, Jack, don't be such a crab. Dennis comes over to visit you and you jump all over him. Yeah, if you're not nice to me, I won't give you the gift I brought for you.
The gift?
Uh-huh. Mother thought I should bring some flowers and my father suggested candy, but I decided it might be better to give you something that you can get some use out of.
Well, I like practical gifts. What'd you get me, Dennis?
A set of false teeth.
False teeth?
What's the way they grab your finger?
Ow! Things away from me. I've never used false teeth. I don't need false teeth, and I don't want them.
Gee, then I guess I better take them back.
Certainly you'll take them back. In the first place, who brings people false teeth for a gift? In the second place, Dennis, when someone needs false teeth, they have to go to a dentist. An impression has to be made. Fittings have to be taken. And you have to wait till the gums are set so the jaw won't recede. Even then, you may have to go back 3 or 4 times if the palate is irritated or the bite overlaps.
Gee, for someone who doesn't wear them, you're sure an expert.
Dennis, cut it out! Look, if you just came here to aggravate me, you can go home now.
Great. a great gag there. Yeah.
May I add to that?
Yes, by all means.
Yeah, Dennis was always driving Jack nuts. He was doing things that, and Jack would fall for it. Like one time Dennis came over, we had Dennis come over to Jack's house to discuss the next week's music or something of that nature. And when they had finished that, Jack showed him to the door, and as Dennis left, he says, "Goodbye, Mr. Benny, and have a pleasant trip." And then Jack went upstairs and was halfway through packing before he realized he wasn't going anyplace. So he just, anytime Dennis said something, he got sucked in on it.
We'll be right back with George Balzer, Larry, and John Gassman. I'm Ray Bream, and this is KBC Talk Radio, AM 790. We're talking with George Balzer, writer for the Jack Benny program for 25 years, and also in the studio, Larry and John Gassman of SPIRDVAC. That's the Society to Preserve and Encourage Radio Drama, Variety, and Comedy. Tell me about Rochester, George. Where did you find Rochester, and how did that character come about?
Rochester was on the show before I got there, but the story on Roch is that he was... His name was Eddie Anderson. He was a vaudeville performer, and I think he did a lot of dancing. But they had the Jack Benny script required having a train porter. So they got Eddie to play the part, and the first time he was on the show, his name was Syracuse.
Syracuse?
Syracuse. Mm-hmm. They did a Rochester routine, but the name was Syracuse. And he was such a big hit that they said, we can't let this guy go. So they decided to make him Jack's butler and changed his name to Rochester. And that went on for some 30 years more.
They had to keep it in upstate New York.
Yes, that's right.
Yes.
Now, I'll tell you a little bit about Roch. He did a marvelous job for us. But Roch had a way of keeping you a little bit nervous, always a little bit on edge. And one habit he had was that we traveled, and we traveled an awful lot, and we'd go mostly by train. Roch was never there at the station. You never saw him anywhere at the station, and when you got on the train, he was nowhere on the train, and the train is waiting to start. But somehow, as the train started to move, Roch would swing aboard. And Jack was steaming at this time because he worried about him. And this went on and on and on, and then he always got on. Well, one day, we're all at the station, same setting, train starts to move. There's no Roch, and he didn't get on. So Jack says, well, I knew it would happen. I'm glad it happened, and I'm going to really take care of this. We leave Los Angeles area. We're heading out down the tracks. We go to San Bernardino, and as we pull into San Bernardino, who do you think is standing on the platform? Rochester. And he's got boxes and boxes of barbecued spare ribs. He gets on board, and that night, after everyone else on the train had their dinner, then we took over the diner, and we're all sitting there with this beautiful barbecue. And I leaned over to Jack, and I said, Jack, you know, it's awfully hard to be mad at somebody when you're chewing on one of his spare ribs. And he says, yeah.
And now, folks, here is our your capitalist news reporter with a special item.
Ladies and gentlemen, Rochester Van Jones, who has been adrift in the Pacific Ocean for the last 2 days, has been found by the Coast Guard and towed into port.
What?
Rochester is the butler of that famous comedian, Jack Bentley.
That's Benny.
Our quartet will now sing their version of that new song hit, Yes, We Have No Bananas, Butter, or Sugar.
I don't want to hear that. Oh, my goodness, Rochester adrift in the Pacific. I didn't even know he was on a boat. Well, thank heaven he's safe. When he gets home, I'm going to... Maybe that's him. Hello?
Long distance call for Jack Bentley.
That's Benny. I'll take it.
Very well.
Hello? Hello? Hello, is this Rochester?
You were expecting Navy ship work, Kelly?
Rochester, I just heard about you being in the ocean for 2 days. How are you?
Salty!
I know, but tell me what happened.
Well, boss, me and my friend Sam were about 20 miles off Catalina when we developed motor trouble. And you know I can't swim.
Uh-huh.
Then suddenly a big wave swept me overboard and I landed right next to a vicious-looking shark. So I got back to the boat fast.
Wait a minute. You just said you couldn't swim.
I didn't think I could run on water either, but I did.
Well, what happened then?
Well, when we weren't rescued after the first day, we realized we were in a tough spot. So we started sending out messages in bottles.
What did the messages say?
Send more bottles.
Rochester, I hope you weren't drinking out there.
Oh, no, boss. No, sir. But after the second day, we sure got hungry. And fortunately, a bird landed on back of the boat.
A bird? Good.
So I picked up my rifle, took aim, and I...
Rifle? Rochester, you wouldn't shoot a poor little bird.
No, I just wanted to frighten her enough to lay an egg.
Did you frighten her?
Did I? She laid 2 eggs, 3 strips of bacon.
Rochester, don't be ridiculous. A bird can't lay bacon.
Boss, when you got a gun in your face, you find out you got talent you never knew you had.
Never mind that. Now tell me, how did you get back to shore?
Well, the Coast Guard finally found us and towed us into the harbor.
Well, I'm glad it came out all right. It certainly was an unusual experience.
It sure was.
Rochester, what are you laughing at?
It's the first time I ever lost a weekend on water.
Well, anyway, Rochester, I'm glad you're safe, and hurry out here to Palm Springs.
I will. Goodbye.
Goodbye.
Now, let me go back a moment and tell why we did that routine. We were doing a show out of Palm Springs, and we were just about ready to go into rehearsal for Saturday morning. This was now Friday about noon, and we had a spot all written for Rochester, and there's a bulletin from the Coast Guard that Roch and a companion is lost at sea. Legit. He was really lost. And this got national publicity. Now, and a few hours later, the Coast Guard sent out another radio bulletin saying that he was found. Everybody was safe. So now we said, wait a minute. This whole thing went coast to coast. We can't let him do the routine we've got written. So we rewrote the Rochester spot and tied it in with the fact that he was lost at sea. That's how that came about.
All right. Rochester, of course, was a very, very funny man and added so much to the show. And, of course, there were all those scenes with Rochester. But writing those gags seemed to fit Rochester. Now, you know, that line that you wrote, send more bottles.
Well, I'll tell you now a strange thing. When we divided the show up, the two teams, we didn't care who took what half. Usually we said to the, Sam and I would say to the others, what half do you want? Because we didn't care.
Mm-hmm.
And they would select a half. Maybe that half would have the Rochester routine in it. Maybe it wouldn't. If it didn't, we would do it. And it didn't, you know, there was no special writer for Rochester. We all wrote Rochester.
But it played so well. We'll be right back with George Balzer, for 25 years the chief writer for the Jack Benny program, along with Larry and John Gassman of Spurdvac. My guest is George Balzer, chief writer for the Jack Benny program for 25 years, along with Larry and John Gassman of Spurdvac. Let's get to Mel Black. Mel Black was with the show for how long? From the beginning?
No, not... Well, yes, almost. Almost from the beginning, and of course, you can't say enough about Mel and the...
He took virtually any part that you gave him, right?
Anything you wanted him to do, he could do it.
Including the sound effects on many things.
He was the motor on Jax Maxwell.
We'll get to that here in a minute.
And
let's listen to Mel Blanc for a second and one of the great routines. Let's take a listen.
Hey, you. Come here. Are you a Mexican bandit?
Si.
I suppose your men are tough.
Si.
I guess they would kill us at a drop of a hat.
Si.
What's your name?
Si.
Si?
Si.
Look, see? I mean, Si. We don't have any
anything you want. We're hunters. That's all we are.
You do not fool me. You have some gold and we want it. If you don't give it to us, we will kill you. I think.
All right, that was, of course, the very famous CSI routine.
If I may, the CSI routine, Sam and myself, we were working on that part of the show. We were doing a satirization of Treasure of the Sierra Madre, in which Walter Houston and Humphrey Bogart are the stars.
I don't got to show you no stinking badges.
in the picture. And Don played the Houston part, and of course Jack was Humphrey Bogart. That's when, while we're working on that, and I just happened to get a thought that since the location was in Mexico, if he would just talk to a Mexican bandit and just ask questions, and he would just say, see, then Jack would say, what's your name? Say, see. That's all we wanted to do was that one short routine. Instead, it played so well that I think we did that periodically in each season for about 25 years. Just never let go of it.
We talked about Mel Blanc with his sound effects that he created with his mouth. He was the motor of Jack Benny's very famous car, the Maxwell.
Well, boss, I've got all the luggage in the car.
Good. Come on, let's go. Are you sure all the lights are off and the doors are locked, Rochester?
Yes, sir.
Good. Okay, start the car.
Okay.
Gasoline.
I'd settle if we had a little gasoline in the water.
Never mind. Try the motor again, will you?
Yes, sir.
The motor sounds as though it's going from bad to worse.
Sounds like it's going from here to eternity.
Rochester, don't be funny. Try it once more.
Nope.
The motor's not even catching. Maybe the battery's dead.
Can't be that, Mr. Benny. I put a new battery in yesterday.
A new battery? How much did it cost?
Nothing. I got it out of your flashlight.
Once more. There you are, Rochester. The motor's going. Back the car out of the garage.
Wait till that crowd gets out of the way.
All right, folks, break it up. Break it up. Beat it. Beat it. Why do they always gather when we try to start the car? You can go, Rochester. They've gone now.
Very famous Maxwell sound.
I describe Mel's motor, the end of that motor, as the last gasp of a dying swan coming through at least 18 inches of congested neck.
All right, let's take a call from Sid. Hello, Sid. You're on with George Balzer, Larry, and John Gassman. Go ahead.
Good morning, gentlemen.
Good morning. Good morning.
My recollection goes back to one of Mel Blanc's bits, too, and I guess you would call it a running gag. It would run for weeks. Remember the bit about the Cimarron roll?
Well,
when Mel Blanc was driving that bakery truck through.
You're upstaging us here.
Yeah. That's
because that was coming up next.
It was.
Yes, it is, and we'll give you the whole history on that.
Good.
Anything else?
Well, I was just wondering, on that gag, did the Cimarron bit, you know, the fact that he was pushing the special every week.
Yes.
Was funny. Now, did the punchline, was it intended to be a punchline after running for a couple of weeks, or did it just develop after playing that good for a while?
Well, now, after the fourth week, we cut it off. We found a way to, a solution for the whole thing. I don't know whether you remember that. And
it was leading up to the punchline at the final,
Yeah, well...
built up deliberately.
Yeah, sure, because it played so well for us, we just kept nursing it along for... Well, I'll give you the whole story on it in just a moment or two.
Okay, fine.
And then we'll play it for you.
Good, thank you.
Okay.
Right-o. Bye.
All right, we've got about a minute here before we take our first cutaway. What about the genesis of the Cimarron Rolls?
Well, it happened by accident. We had a scene with Jack in the bakery shop buying some bakery goods, and Mel was the clerk. I was sitting back in the back of the house. A friend had come over to visit me, and we were sitting there talking, and the rehearsal's going on upstage, and this friend of mine, hadn't seen him in quite a while, was telling me about it, that he and his wife had just moved to a new apartment, and it was decorated very modern. And he says they had modern this, and they had modern that, and modern something else. And it was very modern. Well, we know what he meant to say was modern. So when he left, I went up on stage, and I said, Jack, I got an idea. He says, what is it? I said, you know where you're in the bakery shop, and you're ordering from Mel the cinnamon rolls? He says, yeah. He says, let's change it. Just you order cinnamon, and Mel says Cimarron. And now the rest of the routine is you trying to correct him. He says, gee, that sounds kind of funny. I said, maybe it is. Let me find out. So he says, go ahead, see what you can do with it. So I took a little time, and
we did it. My guest is George Balzer. I'm Ray Bream, and this is KBC Talk Radio, AM 790. All right, we have the first of the Cimarron Rolls gags, and this is the way it went.
Oh, boy, look at those nice-looking cakes in the window. Yeah, I'll go in and buy something.
Huh? Yes, sir, what can I do for you?
Well, I don't know, everything looks so good here. What do you recommend?
Well, we got pies, cakes, donuts, brownies, and Cimarron Rolls.
What?
Cimarron Rolls.
Don't you mean cinnamon?
That's what I said, Cimarron Rolls.
Well, I don't want any of those. Oh, I want to. Have you got any lady fingers?
I used to have, but I had to get rid of them. They kept cracking their knuckles.
So smart. I came in here to buy something. Now, let's see. Well, I know. I'll have a half a dozen donuts, that chocolate cake, and I think I'll have some of those Cimarron rolls.
What?
I said I'll...
To pick it up in the next hour. There's more to come. Just stop it right there if you would, and we'll pick it up on the Cimarron Rolls. My guest, George Balzer, for 25 years, the writer for the Jack Benny program, and also Larry and John Gassman, who are officials of an organization called SpiritVac, the Society to Preserve and Encourage Radio Drama and Variety and Comedy. This is Talk Radio. I'm Ray Bream. Stay tuned for the news.
KABC, Talk Radio 790.
This is Talk Radio. I'm Ray Bream, and my guest is George Balzer, writer for the Jack Benny program for 25 years. And we're reminiscing about all the great lines and the Benny people. And Larry and John Gassman, who are trying to keep this type of radio alive. They're members of the Society to Preserve and Encourage Radio Drama, Variety, and Comedy. To be exact, president and board of directors and John, what is yours?
Acquisitions. Right.
Yes, okay.
Disc tapes, scripts.
How many programs have you dubbed off from those old 16-inch discs to tape? Any idea?
Well, we've probably dubbed 10 or 15,000.
Really? That many?
Yeah. Until December, I could have said 99%, but fortunately, Palladium Entertainment donated the Lone Ranger and Sergeant Preston radio transcriptions, or about 6,900 of them, to us. So we got a lot of work to do now.
Yes, you have. That'll keep you busy for a long time.
Oh, yeah.
George Balzer, we were in the midst of the Cimarron Rolls routine with, of course, Mel Blanc. Let's continue with that, and then we'll go to a few other cuts and talk more about the Cimarron Rolls, all right?
Fine. We finished the first segment.
No, we really didn't. We were right in the middle of it.
We ran out of time, remember?
We ran out of time.
Well, then, all right.
Let's pick it up.
Let's pick it up.
Here we go.
Sure, okay.
All right.
Well, I know. I'll have a half a dozen donuts, that chocolate cake, and I think I'll have some of those Cimarron Rolls. What? I said I'll... have some of those Cimarron Rolls.
Don't you mean cinnamon rolls?
Yes, give me six of them. Now, how much is it all together?
Oh, let's see. Donuts, chocolate, pastry, and a half a dozen Cimarron Rolls. That comes to a dollar even.
A dollar? Well, here you are. Goodbye.
Goodbye. And call again. You're quite a character.
All right, now, that's the routine we did, thinking we would do it just that once and forget it.
Mm-hmm.
But it played so well that the next week we worked the little bakery fella into a show. I think Jack was in a... We were doing a Western sketch, I believe, mm-hmm. and Jack was in a hotel room, and he had sent for room service. So here we are with the second week of that routine.
Come in.
Did you call for room service?
Yes, I want some breakfast. Orange juice, coffee, and let's see, what can I have with the coffee?
Well, we have toast, English muffins, donuts, and Cimarron rolls.
What?
Cimarron rolls.
Look, waiter, bring me some orange juice, coffee, and a Cimarron roll.
Okay, and you're lucky. Yesterday, I couldn't have brought you any Cimarron rolls.
Why not?
We were out of cinnamon.
Just go get it.
Oh, great. Mel Blanc's voice just breaks me up every time I hear
right,
it.
What goes on here now?
All right, so we go to number three here in a second.
The Easter Parade.
No, we have number three, Cimarron
yeah.
Rolls.
Yeah, okay, fine. Then we now come to the third time we used it, which is in the Easter Parade.
Well, that's the Easter Parade.
Yeah,
all
that's
right.
The Easter Parade. Jack all and Mary right. are walking in the Easter Parade.
All right, I can hardly wait. Let's do it.
Gosh, there are a lot of people out today. You know, it seems like...
Hello, Mr. Burney. Happy Easter.
Oh, happy Easter, Mr.
Don't you remember me? I'm the clerk that waited on you at the bakery shop.
In the bakery shop?
Yeah, don't you remember? You came in and I sold you chocolate cake, some donuts, some pastry, and a half a dozen Cimarron rolls.
Oh, yes. Say, Mary, this is the fella I told you about. He can't pronounce cinnamon.
I can't, though.
All right, let's hear you say cinnamon.
Cimarron.
You see, Mary?
Look, mister, it's such a simple word. You just pronounce it like it's spelled. C-I-N-N-A-M-O-N.
C-I-N-N-A-M-O-N?
Yes, Cimarron.
Well, thanks, lady. It's easy when you spell it twice.
Yes, it's easy.
All right, now that's the third time we used it. The following week, the cast was over at Jack's house, supposedly for a rehearsal, I believe, and there's a knock on the door, and Jack goes out, and here's the fourth time we used it.
There's someone at the back door. Rochester, give everybody coffee. I'll answer.
Hello, Mr. Bunny.
Oh, the man from the bakery shop, huh?
Yeah, I got the stuff that you ordered. Some donuts, some chocolate cake, some pastry, and a half a dozen Cimarron rolls.
You still can't pronounce it, can you? Look, it isn't Cimarron, it's cinnamon. Now, let me ask you something. Maybe this will help you pronounce it. How are these rolls made?
Well, you take some flour, sugar, eggs, do you want to know all the ingredients?
Oh, look, it isn't ingredients, it's ingredients. Yes, I want to know all of them, then.
Well, there's flour, sugar, eggs, shortening, and cinnamon.
That's it. Now, look, take your time. Think. Okay. Now, let me hear you say it.
Ingredients.
I don't mean ingredients. I'm trying to get you to say Cimarron. I mean cinnamon.
Why don't you order something else? You drive me nuts.
All right, just give me my stuff. Thanks and goodbye.
Bye.
Jack, who is that?
Oh, that silly guy from the bakery. The fellow who insists upon saying Cimarron rolls. Well, here you are, kid. You can have some of these with your coffee. They're nice and fresh.
Wait a minute, Jack. He's right.
What do you mean he's right?
Well, look at that label on this paper box. These are genuine Cimarron rolls, named after J.P. Cimarron, founder of the Cimarron Baking Company.
What?
These Cimarron rolls should not be confused with ordinary cinnamon rolls, which are made from entirely different ingredients.
Well, Jack, I guess that'll hold you.
Hold me nothing. That silly guy had that label printed himself just because he can't say cinnamon. He must be crazy.
Well, boss, there's one way of finding out.
How?
Ask him if he showers with a peeled potato.
All right, now that line from Rochester got a big laugh, but just being a part of this excerpt, it doesn't mean anything. He says, the man must be crazy. He's just ask him if he showers with a peeled potato. But that was part of a running gag in that same show.
We talked about a peeled potato, right?
Well, what happens is that now we'll go back to the beginning of that show, long before the bakery man came in, and we'll show you how the peeled potato worked its way down through the script.
We'll do that after we take a break.
Fine.
That's upcoming, so stay with us. My guest, George Balzer, writer for the Jack Benny program for 25 years, along with Larry and John Gassman of Spurdvac. Talk, TALK. South Bay Area, dial 679. Glendale and Pasadena, 244. 990 for the San Fernando Valley. And in Orange County, the 714 area, 750. The 213 area of Orange County, 448. Los Angeles, it's 520, and then talk. George Balzer is my guest, who was the writer for the Jack Benny program for 25 years, along with Larry and John Gassman of Spurdvac. We were talking about the peeled potato gag that preceded this excerpt regarding the Cimarron rolls.
Right. Now we'll go back to the top of that show.
Okay.
And we will then find out why Rochester's reference to peeled potato.
Okay, here we go.
And now let's go out to Jack Benny's house in Beverly Hills. It's such a lovely morning that outside on the front lawn, we hear the splashing of birds in the bird bath. While upstairs, we hear the sound of the shower.
Oh, what a beautiful morning. Oh, what a beautiful day. I've got a wonderful feeling that everything's going my way.
Rochester, I'm through showering. You can stop singing now.
Okay.
Say, Rochester, I don't know where you're buying soap lately, but that new bar I just used didn't lather at all.
I didn't know you took a new bar of soap. Did you get it out of the service closet?
No, I found it in the kitchen.
In the drawer?
No, in a dish near the drain board.
Well, congratulations, boss.
Why?
You have just showered with a peeled potato.
Imagine showering with a peeled potato. Now, Rochester, while I get dressed, how about fixing me some breakfast?
Yes, sir. Oh, what a beautiful morning. Oh, what a beautiful day. I've got a wonderful... Oh, good morning, Polly.
Oh, what a beautiful morning. Oh, what a beautiful day. Ah, I've got a wonderful feeling that something is coming my way.
She had a feeling, all right. She laid an egg. Good girl, Polly. Beautiful morning.
Oh, hello, Rochester.
Oh, good morning, Miss Livingston. Come right in.
You must be in a good mood. I heard you singing as you were coming to the door.
Oh, I always sing when it's getting close to my payday.
Why do you sing so long before payday?
There ain't much to sing about after.
I know what you mean.
Oh, good morning, Mary.
Hello, Jack. You know, it's so early, I thought you'd still be in bed.
In bed? Are you kidding? I've already taken my shower. Rochester, how about breakfast?
Coming up.
Mary, would you care for something to eat?
No, thanks. I'm not hungry.
You know, Mary, you look kind of cute this morning. You really do. How about a kiss?
Okay. That's funny.
What?
I just said I wasn't hungry, and now I've got a craving for potatoes.
Funny, funny bit. All right, that's the peeled potato gag. We have Dave on the line from Minneapolis, and let's take a call. Hello, Dave. You're on with George Balzer and also Larry and John Gassman. Go ahead.
Hello, Ray. This is Dave from Minneapolis, also known as K0IZD.
I've got a ham in the crowd.
Yeah. But anyway, when I was younger, much younger, like a little kid, I used to listen to the Jack Benny program all the time. It was my favorite on the radio. And I'm now a stand-up comedian, too. Congratulate you on the quality of your writing. It was superbly written.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
Oh, and it's a distinct pleasure for me to be able to talk to you. Wow.
Well, it's a pleasure for me to hear that we've got a young comedian coming up here.
Yeah, well, I try to take after Jack Benny a little bit.
Let me ask you, Dave, do you have somebody writing for you, or do you have to write your own?
I write my own, yeah.
What have you been able to learn by listening to the Jack Benny program, say?
Timing?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Very important. Something else very important, if I may say so.
Yes.
Do everything you can to make that audience like you.
Oh, sure.
Even if it takes an extra 30, 40 seconds when you first come out, come off as a nice fella. If they like you, it's easy to make them laugh. Mm-hmm.
That's generally my style.
But if you come out and a little bit smart alecky, they're not going to laugh no matter how funny you are. They hate you already.
Yeah.
So come out and take a little time and talk to the audience a little bit and kind of get them in your hand. Then give them the entertainment.
Oh, sure. But I was wondering, is there any place where we could buy recordings of old Jack Benny programs?
Well, I think the Spurgeback people would have the answer to that.
There are places where you can buy them, but at greatly exorbitant prices for the most part. If you get involved with organizations like Spurgeback, who have lending libraries, you can record them for yourselves at basically the cost of mailing and handling, and enjoy them, I think, a lot more.
Oh, okay. I've never heard of that organization.
All right. It's P.O. Box 1587. Are you copying that?
He's a ham. He ought to copy.
Sorry. Want me to send it out in CW?
Yeah.
P.O. Box 1587, Hollywood 90078.
And what was the name of the organization again?
Spurdvac, Sperdvac. That's all you have to do.
Okay. I'll write to him.
All right. Take care.
Hey,
thank you, Dave.
Bye now.
Bye-bye. We'll be right back. I'm Ray Brame, and this is KBC Talk Radio, AM 790. On the line from Moore Park, California. Good morning, Gary. You're on with George Balzer, Larry, and John Gassman.
Good morning. That's Jerry, and I'm one of the...
Jerry.
From NPR's KCSN 30 Minutes to Curtain. George.
Yes.
Can you tell me the background on the grass rake, grease rack routine?
Yes, I can. Mary, was his, let's see, I have to think about this. She made a mistake. She was supposed to say the car was up on the grease rack. Instead, she said the car was up on the grass rake. Now, Jack jumped all over and says, Mary, there's no such word, grass rake. How could you make such a mistake? So forth and say, he just rode her terribly for I guess a week or two. Mm-hmm. Then we went to Palm Springs and we're doing a show. And again, we referred to the grass rake, that there's no such thing. Well, chief of police was our guest star. So he came in for his spot, and he told about an incident that happened the night before, and that they were called out by some woman because on her lawn there were 30 skunks. Jack says, 30 skunks? He says, yes, and boy, did that grass reek.
Yes.
Now, yes. Now this was the way we paid it off. And I guess then Mary says, you see, and you said there was no such word. That's the story on grass reek. It was an honest mistake.
Incidentally, let me follow up your Cimarron bit.
Yes.
You know that Cimarron is really the cross street to the street Rochester's house is on.
I'm familiar with the name Cimarron.
Cimarron Street.
It is. That's where he was, on 37th Place.
South of Jefferson Boulevard.
Yes, that's right.
Boy, I'm glad I came tonight.
I've been to a lot of good parties there.
We did, too, in high school. Apropos the C-Psi routine,
yes.
There's a Sue Tsui in the Ventura County phone book.
Oh, really?
Isn't it?
No, O'Reilly.
Oh, come on. Now, cut that out.
Yeah. No, I'll tell you what happened with the C-Psi routine. The reason we could run it for so long is because as time went by, and I'm talking about years, we added to it. We got into the Sister Sue, what does she do? See, and so forth. And we extended that as we went along.
I loved it.
It played marvelously well for us.
Are John and Larry being modest, or haven't they mentioned that they do a show five evenings a week called Same Time, Same Station on the Pasadena City College?
No, we knew sooner or later you were going to call in and plug it.
Over at KPCC. Yeah. Up on Mount Wilson. We're here.
Did you know that Ronald Reagan's mother, Nellie, used to do, 40 years ago, radio drama, a show called The Mask and Mike Club, aired out of the Hollywood Beverly Christian Church on Valley's KGIL. Can I say that right?
Well, you just did. No, I didn't know that.
I'm writing that down.
Yeah. All right, we have to go, Jerry. Thank you very much.
Let me ask one question.
Hurry.
If anybody's out there who does radio drama, college stations, and the like, I'd like to hear them call in, too.
I hope so, too. Thank you.
Night.
Bye-bye. My guest, George Balzer, chief writer for the Jack Benny program for 25 years, and Larry and John Gassman of Spurdvac. My guest for 25 years, the writer for the Jack Benny program, both radio and television, George Balzer, and Larry and John Gassman, who are with Spurdvac. That's Sperdvac, which stands for the Society to Preserve and Encourage Radio, Drama, Variety, and Comedy. And I sure hope you remember that, because I can never do it. So anyway, here you are. You've got some Braille there, Larry.
That's to help you in case you can't remember Spurdvac.
That, I see.
There you go, Ray. Trying to help, Ray.
For those who don't know, Larry and John are both blind. They're twins, and funny line.
They have to take our word for it.
Of course.
I'd rather have you have it than the engineer.
Listen, I fly blind all the time. Okay, let's get back to what I was asking you, George, about the relationship between you and Jack Benny, the writers
and
Jack
the writers.
Benny.
Well, another story I can tell you, a true story. We had a guest star once at one particular time, and we finished the script, and Jack, in deference to he was a star himself, said, as long as the script is ready, why don't you just take over to his house and have him look it over and tell you whether he's pleased with it or not. just to make him a little more comfortable. So we said, fine. So he didn't live too far from Jack in Beverly Hills. So we went over to this house, and he lets us in, and we all sit down, and he starts reading the script. And he says, what kind of material is this? And he starts picking on the script and getting fairly nasty. Mm-hmm. So we explained. We said, well, we thought that it was all right, that it was that it would play, that it was good for the idea we had and so forth. And he says, well, I don't know whether I want to do this kind of material, and just continued talking in that vein. So we went back to the office, and Jack says, what did he say? We said, Jack, he just, he insulted us. Jack says, well, if that's the way he feels, we won't use him. So we didn't use him that week. We rewrote the show, went on, and then very successful. And then after about 3 or 4 years, the individual was a member of the same club that Jack was. Mm-hmm. Why, he said to Jack, he says, why don't you use me on your show? And Jack says, I'll tell you why. I don't like what you did to my writers.
How about that?
And he said, now, if you want to come on our show and do what they write for you, I'd love to have you. About 3 weeks later, he was our guest. But that just shows you how much Jack...
Great loyalty.
Yeah.
You used the same script, didn't you?
Yes, I believe so. We just fixed it up a little bit.
He never knew.
He just wanted to make, you bet your life, he wanted to make remarks.
All right, we have another excerpt here. This comes from the show, and it's titled Glaucomora. What's the Glaucomora thing?
Well, one day, beautiful spring day, I believe, I was driving to Beverly Hills to meet with Jack and the other fellas, and I have the radio on. And a new song that had just come out, I don't know if it was from Brigadoon or Finian's Rainbow. Mm-hmm. And this beautiful voice is singing, how are things in Glaucomora, etc. And it dawned on me, says, wait a minute, those are all questions. I think we can use that. So here's where we took a lyric of a song, and I don't think we changed it at all.
No.
And we used it and got great results. And I think it's in the railroad station, I believe.
Yes, the good old railroad station.
There we go again. Because
all right,
we were going to go to New York.
Let's take a listen.
Attention, please. Train leaving on track 8 for Glendale, Barstow, and Glaucomora.
I wonder which ticket window I should go to.
I beg your pardon, mister, but are you validating tickets?
Oh, what do you think I'm doing with this rubber stamp? Voting for Hoover?
Mister, I'm going to report you to the station master and see...
Pardon me just a moment. I'm in a hurry. Do you mind if I go first?
No, it's quite all right.
And what can I do for you, sir?
Well, I'd like to know something. I just heard the train announcer say that the train on track 8 now goes to Glendale, Barstow, and Glaucomora.
That's right. Now, what is it you want to know?
How are things in Glaucomora? Is that little brook still leaping there?
Yes, it is.
Does it still run down to Donny Cove through Killybegs, Kilkerry, and Kildare?
Yes, it does.
Is that willow tree still weeping there?
Uh-huh.
Does that lassie with the twinkling eye come smiling by? And does she walk away sad and dreamy there, not to see me there?
Yes, she does.
Give me a ticket to West Los Angeles.
Here's your ticket and have a pleasant trip.
Thanks. To him, he's got to be nice yet.
Now, that was played by Elliot Lewis. Did a beautiful job for us. Played so well that I think the next time we went to the railroad station, we took a different song and did the same type of thing, and I think the second one was
the Tennessee Waltz.
Tennessee Waltz.
All right, we'll take a detour here, and we'll do the Tennessee Waltz. So that's the next cut up, and we'll see what happened there. So let's do it. This is cut number 17, the Tennessee Waltz.
Attention, please. Will passengers who
just arrived on the train from Catalina, please get in your taxis. You're dripping all over the station.
Now, let's see. Now, here's the ticket window. Oh, pardon me. Are you the ticket clerk here?
Yes. I used to be in Pasadena, but they moved me on account of the freeway.
That's very funny.
Thank you.
Attention, please. He stole that joke from me.
Now, look, clerk. Now, let's not have any trouble here. I want a ticket to New York.
Return trip?
No, one way.
Good.
Back by plane. So just do what I...
Excuse me, sir, but may I go ahead of you? I'm in a hurry.
Well, yes, I guess so.
Well, you see, I'm just going on my vacation for 3 weeks, and I don't want to waste a minute of it. Clerk, will you give me a ticket?
Yes, sir. Where to?
Oh, I don't care. Any place is all right with me.
Well, the next train out is going to Nashville, Tennessee.
No, I'm not there. I don't want to go back to that state again.
Why not? What happened there?
Well, I'll tell you. I was dancing with my darling to the Tennessee Waltz. When an old friend I happened to see.
And you introduced him to your loved one?
Yes. And while they were waltzing, my friend stole my sweetheart from me.
Well, why don't you try to forget?
Forget? I remember the night in the Tennessee Waltz. Now I know just how much I have lost.
Look, mister.
You keep out of it. Just what did you lose? Well, I lost my little darling the night they were playing the beautiful Tennessee Waltz.
What are you crying for? You're number one on the hit parade.
I told you to keep out of it.
I'm sorry.
Well, look, how about a ticket to Banff? Oh, yes, that'll be swell. Oh, you'll enjoy it there. It's very close to Lake Louise. Oh, no. I can't go there.
Why not?
Louise was the name of my little darling. The one I was dancing with to the Tennessee Waltz when an old friend I have...
Look, one chorus is enough. Now, clerk, give me my ticket, will you?
I love it.
Now, the next time they tried to tell us we're too young.
We'll get to that here in a minute. We have to take a break. But one thing I want to ask you, that, will, of course, was Frank Nelson. And the Frank Nelson character always I love so much. And the idea of, yes. Now, when you wrote that in the script, did you have a prolonged yes, or did you just write, why, yes?
We prolonged it, but not as far as he did. We just put on...
Nobody could do
we
that.
We put on, like, maybe four S's. Yes.
We'll be right back.
Well,
I'm Ray Bream, and this is KBC Talk Radio, AM 790. Writer for the Jack Benny program all those years, 25 years to be exact, along with Larry and John Gassman of Spiritvac. George, I have a question. The running gags were so typical of the Benny show. I remember one that went on for a long time. Your eyes are as blue as the waters of Lake Louise.
Well,
which, of course, if anybody's ever been to Lake Louise, you know the guy.
Jack actually did. He really had blue eyes, and as he would describe them at times, as the what we wrote for him would be bluer than the lips of a schoolboy at 40 below, or bluer than the thumb of a cross-eyed carpenter.
But the waters of Lake Louise are not blue. That's the gag, of course. Yes. They're green.
One I particularly like is a little more complicated than the first two examples I gave you. When someone would say to Jack, your eyes, they're blue, aren't they? Jack would say, bluer than the stomach of a dachshund that's been chased through a huckleberry patch. And we had a lot more, of course.
Let's take a call from Emily in Riverside, California. Emily, you're on with George Balzer, Larry, and John Gassman. Go ahead.
This is my first time for calling, but something just happened. And listening to them talking about Jack Benny, I have to tell you something.
Yes.
I'm an old lady,
I'm an old man.
54 years ago, on the 21st of June, 1933, I was in the hospital having a baby. My cousin went in and had a baby at the same time, and she died. Now, her husband said he would not take the baby. He wanted nothing to do with it because he lost his wife on account of it. Jack Benny was performing in Boston, Massachusetts. I'm getting a little emotional.
Yes.
And he heard about it. It went in the papers that there was a baby that father refused to take, and it was in the Boston City Hospital, and Jack took it and adopted it, and that's my cousin, Joan.
Wow. That's Joan. Mm.
I wanted all my life to let her know, but my family said no. They didn't know if she knew she was adopted, and it was never told. But I have a cousin. I've followed her life. I know she was married and divorced and the whole bit.
Uh-huh. Well, I... I
had to tell you that he...
And she doesn't know any of this history.
She may not, so I don't want her to know. She doesn't know.
Yes.
I don't know what they told her. But
yeah.
She named her Joan.
Uh-huh.
And she was born the 20th.
Well, I've known her since...
She must be 54 years old, because my son is 54.
Yes, I met her when she was, I think, about 8 years old.
Oh. Well, if you ever see her, tell her she has a cousin, Emily, who loves her.
Uh-huh.
Spirit. I've never met her, but I know this man came out in the Boston papers. Of course, that was a story. There was a man with a brand new baby, and he said he refused to take it because his wife died after.
Yeah, well.
And Jack and Mary Livingston took it.
Uh-huh.
That's quite a story. Emily, thank you very much.
Yes.
I just wanted you to know what a wonderful person he is, and I don't know what she knows. That's why I've never made it.
Well, I saw her a month or so ago, and she's a very fine lady.
Thank you very much, Emily. Now, let's get back to the Too Young routine. Another song based on this lyric of the song, working it into the train routine. So let's do it. Here we go.
Come on, Mary. I want to get my ticket changed to a Pullman. Let me see. Where's the ticket window? Oh, here's a window that isn't busy here. Oh, mister. Mister. Are you the ticket agent?
If I'm not, I made $2,000 today. Hey, now, what can I do for you?
Well, I'd like to exchange this ticket.
Oh, did you get it for Christmas?
No, I didn't get it for Christmas. Just that this ticket is for the coach, and I'd like to ride Pullman. Now, look, my train leaves in a few minutes, so will you please...
Pardon me, but would you mind if we went ahead of you?
Huh?
We just got married, and we're very anxious to get away. Ain't we, honey?
Well, that's all right. Go right ahead.
Where would you like to go?
Any place. We just want to get away before our parents catch up with us. They objected to us getting married.
They did? Why?
They tried to tell us we're too young.
Too young to really be in love?
They said that love's a word we've only heard. Too young to know. Our love will last, though years may go.
Well, don't you worry. Someday they may recall. You are not too young at all. Well, here's a ticket and congratulations.
Thank you. And it was very nice of you to let us go ahead of you. Would you like to kiss the bride?
No, thanks.
Everybody refuses. Come on, dear, we're leaving for our honeymoon.
Phil Harris, of course.
Frank Nelson and Elliot Lewis.
Oh, that was Elliot Lewis?
Yeah,
that wasn't
Elliot
Phil.
Lewis. Yeah, Elliot Lewis did all
that,
three.
That was Elliot Lewis, yeah.
Oh, it sounded like Phil.
Yeah, no, it was
That was Elliot Lewis.
Oh, yeah, Elliot.
And Frank Nelson. A lot of people remember Frank Nelson for the character, but a lot of people don't know that he was very active in the radio union, radio and TV union. He was one of its first...
right, yes.
National...
Presidents, of
AFTRA.
For many, many, many years.
That's
he
right.
He was very heavily involved with the...
And
with
did so much for the... If I recall, it was Frank Nelson who was at the head of the union when they got the pension and welfare, which was a very big...
I believe so.
Well, he was a great man.
He did a great job for us for all those years.
Well, I have to tell you that we're coming to the end of the program, and George Balzer and Larry and John Gassman have spurred back. Gee, we're going to have to try and do something like this again.
Oh, anytime.
George, any parting line here? We've got about 10 seconds.
Well, except to say that it's been a lot of fun, and maybe you're right about doing it again sometime.
I hope you've had fun.
Yes, indeed.
I think all of our audience has, and thanks to all of you for being with us.
Thank you. Anytime we can talk about Jack Benny, it's a well worth 3 hours. We can do this for days.
There you go.
Matter of fact, oh, no, never mind.
Thank you. I'm Ray Bream, and this is KBC Talk Radio, AM 790. We have time for another quick bet. Do we have a little bit of the, I love the rim shot thing. Let's do that. You know, I mean, that's great. All right. So that's, do we have it? Okay, let's go.
Gee, Mary, it was awfully nice of you to drive me down to the station.
Oh, that's all right, Jack. I wanted to see you off.
Yeah, well, let's go in.
Train leaving on track 5 for Anaheim. Azusa, and Cucamonga.
You know, Jack, there's something fascinating about a railroad station. So many people going so many places.
Yeah. Mary, I'm going over to the newsstand to get a magazine. You wait for me here.
Okay.
Attention, please, attention. To facilitate the holiday rush, all passengers going to Cucamonga may have their choice of trains, local, express, or mule. Have your feed bags validated.
Well, I've still got time to get my magazine. He hasn't announced my train yet.
Attention, please, attention. Train leaving on track 1 for Baltimore and Washington. It's leaving now, so you better run.
Well, I better go over and get that magazine before the train leaves.
Attention, please, attention. Train leaving on track 3, all the way to Schenectady. Just one stop at Kansas City.
We don't have time for the rest of it. Again, George Balzer and Larry and John Gassman have spurred back. It's been great. Thanks a lot for being with us.
Thank you. It's been a pleasure.
This is Talk Radio. I'm Ray Bream. Have a good weekend. Stay tuned for the news.
KABC, Talk Radio 790.